are. Welcome back to the Stronger Stride podcast. Thank you so much for being here on an episode 139 with the wonderful, incredible Dean Laws. Tell us about Dean, Lydia. Now, Dean is your regular Aussie bloke, but he has a very inspiring story. And Dean was actually diagnosed with Parkinson's at the age of 52, which he tells us all about in the episode. But he grew up as a very sporty, active person and also as a runner, a triathlete indeed. And having this diagnosis, as you can imagine, totally turned his world upside down, both mentally and physically. Yet this episode wasn't as much a sad story, despite the fact that it was heartbreaking at times listening to the things that he's gone through, but it was much more a story of optimism and hope and inspiration, because something that Dean said in this episode was that he is the fittest he has ever been in his life right now after being diagnosed with Parkinson's 10, 15 years ago. And he actually ran the Sydney Marathon two years ago, I believe, during the COVID year, and now continues to train, runs regularly, trains at the gym, and as he said, is super fit, super strong. So this is a story all about his diagnosis and his management of Parkinson's and all about not giving up hope and what can happen if you, I guess, have a really good community around you and the right support network, which Dean delves into.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an incredible conversation. And I think Dean's message is so important. If you know anyone with Parkinson's, if you yourself have Parkinson's, getting onto Dean's website and understanding a little bit more about the benefits of exercise and movement, and that you are not limited by your Parkinson's, and that there's so many more opportunities out there for you. With the right education and support, you can do so much. The other thing as well, Dean will be at the Hoka Half Marathon. If you're going to be there running, look out for the purple shirts and singlets for the Dean's team and cheer him on if you see him running past.
And I think my biggest takeaway from the episode, separate to the actual journey navigating Parkinson's, but was all about asking for help and really leaning into your community around you. And that's something that Dean talks about. And he says that it took him quite a while to really do that. And now he's got what he calls Dean's Team, which is now this foundation charity for Parkinson's. But that was really hard for him. And I think if you're listening to this episode, you know, not everyone listening is going to have Parkinson's or even know someone with Parkinson's, or maybe not really know what it's like to be limited in a physical way or something. So I guess like big and scary like this. But I do think everyone will relate to that feeling of struggling with something and finding it really hard to ask for help and really hard to lean on people. I feel like that's just such a big part of life. And so for me, hearing him talk about creating a community and creating a support network was really impactful, because I think that's something that everyone can take on and use in their life, because having a community around you is just, I just think it's so important and so crazy that a lot of the time we find it so hard to not lean on the people in our circle.
Absolutely. We will have all of Dean's links listed below in the show notes, so please check him out, give him some support, and enjoy the episode.
Alrighty, team, welcome back to the Stronger Stride podcast. Today we have Dean Laws, who is a marathon runner with Parkinson's, and we're very excited to hear all about his story. Welcome, Dean.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
We are so excited to have you on, and I think your story is something that probably a lot of listeners might be able to relate to, whether personally or maybe someone they know has Parkinson's. And I think there's probably a lot of, maybe, I guess a lot that's unknown, or maybe people are fearful of when they have a diagnosis such as the one that you've got, and not really knowing how they can continue going about their normal daily life, let alone still continuing in their sport or running. We'd love to know a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, when you got into running, and how that journey has looked like kind of in those early years.
Yeah, well, I grew up in the inner west of Sydney, a suburb called Leichhardt, if anyone knows it. And it was like a working class suburb. I got three other brothers, so I was four boys in my family. So you can imagine we didn't get into any trouble, but every time we went into a sport or something like that, it was always two on two. We used to play at home street cricket. We used to play rugby league up the hallway of our house, and it was just a weatherboard house. And when four boys go at it two on two to each other, and the whole house shook, you know. And we used to play street cricket, just bang the stumps into the asphalt road and play down the middle of the street and with a cricket ball, and we were breaking windows and all sorts of things. that's about the biggest trouble we got into. So yeah, so I grew up and it was a really happy family. My father had a good work-life balance. My father played professional soccer when he was younger, but he didn't get paid back in those days. And so we sort of grew up in the soccer community. We all started playing. I started when I was four, playing soccer, and stopped when I was about 26 or 30. Oh, I think it was 30 actually. So we had a pretty good upbringing, pretty healthy upbringing, pretty sporty upbringing. So it was quite good until I played until I was 30, and then at 30, and I was starting a family at the same time, and so I went into triathlons. I gave up the team sport and went into the sport of triathlon. I competed in triathlons for about 10 years, and done about four or five a year, middle distance. I was strictly middle of the pack, nothing outstanding or anything like that. Because with a family, with a young family, it's got difficult to train, especially for a sport like that. So I done that for about 10 years. And then I went into running, because I mean, with running, all you need is a great pair of runners, don't you?
Yeah. Much cheaper than a bike.
Much cheaper than a bike. Yeah, just a great pair of runners. And I got me favorites. That's all you need. So I done that for about 10 years, and I done like a city to surf every year for that 10 years. I done a couple of halves, but no marathons and stuff, a couple of shorter distances. So that took me to when I turned 50, and my diagnosis, my Parkinson's first reared its head at the age of 52, so which is classified as early onset. So that's my upbringing anyway.
Yeah, it sounds like sport has been such an important part of your whole life growing up, and your family life, and into your adult life as well. And yeah, it's an interesting transition. I guess that's probably quite a common story, going from team sport, and then often people go into that triathlon scene, and then maybe specify and just choose one of the disciplines, and running is often that choice. It sounds like that was a really good choice for you, and you've really enjoyed the city of surfs and the half marathons and those events. Yeah. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was during a run when you first started to notice some symptoms.
It was New Year's Day 2013. I was 52 at the time. I always went for a run on New Year's Day, because, you know, that's what runners do, don't they?
Yeah,
they start the, I don't know about you guys, but you start the new year with a run, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Always. So I went out for a 10K New Year's Day. I don't drink at all, so we didn't party the night before. So I went out for a run on New Year's Day. I come back from that run, and it was up the Central Coast. I think it was at Budgerwoy. We used to go up there for holidays, and it was along the beaches, and I come back, I sat on the back porch, which overlooked a river that run through from the beach to the Budgerwoy Lake. It was a beautiful spot, light breeze blowing at the time. I just sat on the back porch cooling down, and I noticed a tremor in my right hand, just a little tremor, but it was really unusual for me, because I've been super healthy my whole life. I never even, you know, got colds very often, you know, the flu or anything like that. And so this tremor in the right hand was really unusual. And I said to my wife, I said, oh, that doesn't feel really good at all, you know. But, you know, like a typical bloke, I ignored it for a while. But it's lasted. A month later, it was still there. So we ended up going to my general practitioner to see what she said about it. A couple of months into the new year.
That must have been really quite frightening, because it sounds like you sort of knew it wasn't right from when it first started. Did you have any idea of what it might be initially? Like, had you heard of Parkinson's before? I mean, I'd imagine most people have, or did you not know anything about it?
No, well, I heard of Parkinson's, but I didn't know anything about it. It was just like I had no idea what was to come. But you're right, it was scary. And I'm not one that's easily scared. I'm pretty happy, go-lucky type of guy. I don't let things worry me too much. But this this was different. This was different. I knew something was not right. So yes, we were a bit hesitant going into the doctor's surgery for the first time. And I remember she checked me out only for about 2 minutes. And then she goes, I'm just going to make a phone call. And she made a phone call to her, a friend of hers that she used to go to uni with, who happened to be a neurologist. And she got me an appointment for the next day. And I said to the GP when she got off the phone, you got me an appointment the next day to a specialist? I said, that doesn't sound great to me. these people are booked out like 6 months in advance, you know. She goes, don't jump to conclusions, just wait and see what they say, you know. Easy for her to say, but, you know, I was a bit worried at that stage. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess having that, the sign that it was quite urgent would be quite confronting because, you know, if she'd sort of just said, oh, maybe just book in when you can or go and get it checked up when you can and there's less of that rush, you might think it's maybe something not to worry about. But as soon as there's, you know, if that's happening the next day, it's, I guess you would be feeling like it was something quite serious, which would be quite scary. And then how was that appointment the next day?
Yeah, yeah, 100% it was scary. And so we rocked up to the appointment with the neurologist the next day, and she'd done the same thing, just checked me out for about 5 minutes. That was all. That was all. Mm. And so I said to her, I said, well, what's the problem? She goes, it could be a couple of things, you know. But she wasn't committing herself. Obviously, she wasn't committing herself at that stage to anything at all. She goes, we just got to go through some tests and we'll see how it goes. But we were thinking like brain tumor or, you know, stuff like that. You know, that's what we were thinking, but she wasn't saying anything. But what I didn't know that at the time and still now, the testing they do is trial and error. I mean, it's, you know, that it's virtually still the same, and it's rule everything else out, and you're left with one thing, literally. And that's the, so over the next 6 months or 5 or 6 months or something, I must have had 100 tests.
Wow.
I was wired up to things. I was given dyes. I was, you know, one test came from America. The medication came from America, and I had to stand by and be ready to rush into the hospital because the medication had to be used within 24 hours. And it was a scary time, you know, being wired up to things and, you know, and not knowing what the outcome was going to be. It was a scary time. Yeah,
it's a really long time. Like, that's so long to be in the dark and to just not really know what the outcome is going to be. When you finally did get that diagnosis of Parkinson's, was there an element of kind of, I mean, relief's probably not the word, but almost like, okay, like we finally like moved on to this next phase of like, now I can sort of deal with what's going on? Or did it more just feel like this, just like, you know, like the dread had finally like fully realized, and was it more just like that was when the sort of suffering really started?
By the time I got back to the specialist, the neurologist, and after all the tests and everything that doctors were and weren't saying up until then, I pretty much knew what they were going to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I pretty much knew they were going to say it was Parkinson's, even without them telling me, you know, in advance. It didn't help, but it didn't prepare me for, you know, the actual words when my neurologist said it, you know, we believe you have Parkinson's, you know. I sort of went into like a brain fog, you know, sometimes in the movies where everything's going on around you, but you can't really hear it properly. You're not listening. You can't really hear it, but everyone else can. Sort of like that, when those scenes in the movies are like that. And I wasn't really listening. Lucky my wife was there and she was listening, getting all the information, because I would have gone out there, you know, knowing only half of what my neurologist said. So, and I do admit to shedding a tear. I know this is unusual for blokes to admit, but I do admit to shedding a tear in the office at the time. So it was very scary, very scary.
Yeah, that moment would have been so hard, and especially with such a long lead up as well, with so much unknown, and you know, having this really strong feeling that you knew what it was, and then I guess having that confirmed would have been really, really hard. And yeah, not being able to take it all in, because it would have just been so overwhelming. You're trying to process it at the same time. You would have been in a bit of shock and just a lot of emotions going around. So yeah, thank you for sharing that with us. I think, it would be such a hard thing. And I think there would be so many people listening who would have had similar moments, whether personally or through family. And I don't think it's spoken enough about how hard that would really be. So thank you for sharing that. And you mentioned that your wife was listening and taking notes, and I guess that next conversation that you would have had with her, did you or her understand what the next steps were, or what these next years were going to look like? Was there much information shared on that day, or did that sort of come later?
No, not on that day. We just had some medication. We were going to do a reasonably quick follow up with the neurologist. So she just gave me some scripts of some medication, which is the first way you start. But even the medication's trial and error, and it still is. See what works, what doesn't work. But we sort of jumped back in the car to come home. The officers were at Camperdown. We live at Leichhardt, which is only a couple of minutes away from each other. And my girls, I had two daughters at the time, and a son. And my girls, they were working age at the time. And they said, look, give us a ring on the way home. With the outcome, because they were, you can imagine what they were like. And they were jittery, because up until then I considered myself invincible, type of thing. You know, when anyone wanted something done, I'd be the one they come to. You know, and all of a sudden that whole thing fell apart. So my wife rang the girls on the way home, and they actually just about got home before us. It only took us about 2 minutes, and they were like about 30 seconds behind us. And we told them what the diagnosis was, and sort of there was a few tears flowing as well. And one of my daughters said to me, look, don't worry, Dad, we'll look after you. That hit hard, because that's something you don't want to hear as a father, you know. That's something you definitely don't want to hear. And I knew where she was coming from. And I appreciated it, and I love her for it, but it's not what I wanted to hear. So that took me a while. That actually took me a while to get my head around that now, instead of invincible, I was vulnerable. Yeah? And that was the big problem for me.
Yeah, that's such a big identity shift. And when you're so used to being that go-to person, and you're probably the protector and the one who looks after everyone and makes sure everyone's okay, to have that completely flipped around the other way, and now to actually need to ask for help or seek help or maybe be given help that you don't want to receive because you want to do it on your own, would be so challenging.
Yes, it was. It was. It was a hard. That was probably the hardest time of the lot. That initial time. Yes.
Wow, Dean. Thank you for sharing that. It's so heartbreaking just listening to that. I just can't even imagine how horrible that would have been, and still is, obviously. Like, it's not something that is curable, right? Like, you're still managing this right now. Yeah. How did you get comfortable with accepting help? And like, you know, you said you've gone to now being vulnerable. Like, have you become more comfortable or like accepted? Is there a form of acceptance, or is it just a constant battle? Like, how have you shifted that mentally?
Yeah, well, I done a typical thing that people with Parkinson's do, which I've learnt now, but I didn't know at the time, and that is waste time. And it is, it's wasting, I wasted 4, maybe 5 years, wasted just taking the medication, trying different medications to see which one works the most. But that's all I done, and I stopped exercising. I stopped me running. I felt that I couldn't do stuff like that. The symptoms got a little bit worse. Muscle soreness, cramping. Wake up in the morning and you can't put your feet on the floor because of pain shooting up your legs. My speech was getting softer. I was starting to choke on food. And all this kind of stuff was happening. And so I found myself not exercising at the time, which was one of the things that I loved doing most. And I wasted at least 4 years after my diagnosis just not doing anything, just because of the impact that it had, that original diagnosis, the impact that it had on it. And I've since learned that that is very common amongst people with Parkinson's, wasting the first few years of their diagnosis. And that is one of the things that we are now working incredibly hard to stop, to get people that have been recently diagnosed straight into the therapies that they need. And that's one of our big focuses at the moment.
Yeah, that's such important work that you're doing. Was there any discussion early on or in those first 4 or 5 years around exercise? Obviously, you were saying you were limited by your symptoms, you were going through a lot of pain, you were trying medications, but had anyone suggested to you that you should try and keep exercising, or was that just not even a thought from any of the specialists or doctors?
No, it wasn't something that was quite prevalent at the time. Wow. The knowledge that they had with what exercise does to Parkinson's. So that never really come up in those first few years. No, that's not something I was thinking of.
Wow.
Until we came to what I call the tipping point, which maybe you want to discuss a little bit later or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we want to hear all about it. Do you think you'd be able to explain for our listeners what Parkinson's actually is, for those who don't actually know what it is? I mean, I think, as you said before, most people have heard of it, right? But doesn't mean you actually know what it is.
Well, yes, I'd love to explain that. And I'll have to put it in my simple terms.
That's
perfect. Yeah. Let me tell you, the latest statistics to start off with, and this is going to horrify you, there's 38 new cases in Australia every day.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, I knew I'd get that response. 38 new cases. So that's more than one an hour now every day diagnosed Australia-wide. So if we don't stem this flow, everyone's going to know about it, aren't they? Let's face it.
Is there more people being diagnosed? Like, is this disease becoming more prevalent? Like, I don't know.
I'm not sure whether it's becoming more prevalent. They think it's coming from, and this is just a theory, from the modern day chemicals. Chemical exposure has got something to do with it, they think. And there's a lot of chemicals out there these days, but they're not really sure about that at all. So Parkinson's, what it is it's simply the lack of a chemical in the brain, dopamine. Dopamine is sort of like the feel-good chemical in the brain. It's also a lubricant. If you think of it, pathways between the brain and the muscles, and there's messages shooting across there like constantly. Dopamine lubricates those pathways, so the messages get there nice and quickly, you know. And the lack of dopamine in the brain means that there's less lubrication of those pathways, so they get stuck, or they don't go to their position at all, or they're jittery on the way there. It's sort of like the pathways are dry type of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's the best way I can explain it. But the problem is, by the time you get diagnosed with Parkinson's, you've already lost 80% of your dopamine in your brain, yeah. So you're already behind the eight ball to start off with. 80% is a lot. And then you think of, and it affects like everything that has a muscle in your body. You think of something that hasn't got a muscle in your body. You know, nearly everything's run by muscles in your body. So, all your movement, it's quite often classified as a movement disorder. Your heart, your lungs, everything's a muscle. So in that, thinking of it like that, virtually everything can be affected, but doesn't have to be, but can be.
And what are some of the most common symptoms then? You've mentioned the tremor was the first thing that you'd noticed. What else have you experienced, and what are some other symptoms that maybe other people have had?
My type of Parkinson's is classified as tremor dominant, which means that's the main symptom, the tremor in the hand, and it's a resting tremor, is what they call a resting tremor. So it's when my hand's not doing anything, it is at its worst. When I go hands on to something, it's, you know, it almost stops. Wow. If I can concentrate on something, it's a very weird disease. But some of the other symptoms, you can get muscle cramping, which I did have, muscle pain, you know, just regular muscle pain. If you're asleep during the night, and your legs are just, they're not doing anything, you know, you're just laying there. And once you put them on the floor in the morning, the messages are not getting quickly enough to your muscles that, oh, Dean's going to stand up now. So that's where the pain comes in the morning through the legs, because, you know, the body's not ready to do what the brain's telling it to do. Mm-hmm. As I said, your voice, because your throat's a muscle, there's muscles in your throat. So it tends to make your voice softer. And I've done 2 years of voice training with my voice pathologist, Zula. So you can hear me obviously nice and clearly today, but it wasn't like that a few years ago. And choking, because, you know, it's hard to get food down if your muscles are not working properly in your throat, and just all sorts of things. Freezing, you go to take a step and you can't quite make that first movement. And another one is what they call mask. You lose all your facial expressions and it looks like you're just staring into space. That can be a little bit scary for your family too. So that's just a few of them, a few symptoms that I have. There are a lot more than that, as you imagine.
Yeah, it sounds so hard and really scary as well. And
yeah,
I think it's not surprising that, well, I mean, you describe it as like wasting those first 4 or 5 years after diagnosis, yet it's not surprising that you were sort of not like coping and really struggling with this, because, you know, it's different when people have like one sort of singular injury or some kind of something which, you know, they have a huge setback or, you know, something that might be really traumatic and horrible. And I don't want to compare necessarily people's pain and struggle, but having something that, you know, that there's no like just fix, it's not going to just go away. It's not going to be like, I'll take this medication and then it will disappear.
It's the unknown.
Knowing that, yeah, it's the unknown. And the fact that it's a condition where, as you said, you've already lost 80% and it's likely to just continue down that direction. It must have just been so terrifying and so hard to not sit in that mentally. Like, I really just can hardly even imagine how, well, I mean, I just can't, like, just seeing yourself deteriorate and know that this is what you've got now. I guess that's where we come to next, where you talk about this tipping point, which I find so, yeah, incredible that you had this sort of turnaround moment or period. Would you be able to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I can tell you the day, not the date, but I can tell you the exact moment where my mindset changed. I go to a church, a local church here called Liberty Hill Christian Center, I've got some great mates that I've been going to the church for 45 years, and so I've known a lot of people there for like 30 years or more, and this is where the community aspect, the help, comes in. I have 12 good mates called, we call ourselves the Bon Gusto Boys. You know, it's an Italian-based church, and Bon Gusto is Italian for good taste. So we go away on wine weekends. I don't drink, but I'm the designated driver all the time, right? So we go away on wine weekends, the 12 of us. And it's very unusual to have 12 really good friends that you've known for 30 years. Mm. That's an unusual thing in itself, you know? And so we're in Mudgee. It's 2019 in Mudgee, and we're sitting around a table outside, and I've got a picture of this from a drone, from one of the guys had his drone, and a picture from above, and it looked like the 12 apostles sitting at the table, yeah. you know that scene. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys, Glenn, turned to me, and a couple of the guys said things over the weekend that were heading this to this point. And he turned to me and said, listen, Dean, what's wrong? What's happening? You know, they already knew I had Parkinson's. I'd had Parkinson's for like 6 years already. So that wasn't an issue. But he said, look, what's wrong? We know there's something wrong. Spill it type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, he's quite blunt about it. And I told him, I said, look, I got a decision to make here. I feel like in myself, I have a decision to make. I'm going to go one way or another. I'm going to let this thing take over me, or I'm going to stand and fight it. And he turned and said to me, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to stand and fight it to start off with, you know. Mm. Letting it take over is not an option. Just hearing that from the whole table, it sort of, you know, fired me up type of thing, because I've always been a fighter. Even when I was younger, growing up during those soccer days, that it was rough. They were rough competitions back then, and we were always fighters. So hearing that, really, that was my tipping point. It was like the set of scales. You know, I could have gone one way or another, and all of a sudden, hearing that, just tipped me that way. And he said, we'll get together and we'll do something on a regular basis that can help you. Well, you tell us, you know, you tell us what you need. He said, why don't we, he said to me, he turned to me and said, why don't we create a team? We'll get together, we create a team, we'll do something athletic, you know. You used to be an athletic type of guy. We'll do something like that. They were all computer guys. So they'd never run in their life practically. Wow. You know? And he said, we'll create a team. He said, why don't we call it the Dean Team? And that day in Mudgee in 2019 was the birth of the Dean Team, virtually. And we didn't decide what to do straight away, that was the birth, that moment of the Dean Team. And we knew something was coming. So
that's so cool.
Yes, it was unbelievable, the support I got from them and still getting from the same guys.
Yeah, that's so nice. And as you said, that community aspect is just so important. And I think it's interesting how you worded it. You know, I've got this decision to make. I can either go one way or the other. And then your friend said, we're going to stand up and fight, as if it's not you on your own having to make this decision and do this thing on your own, go through this challenge by yourself. But you've got this massive support team behind you. So to have that, just that initial reaction, he didn't even have to kind of think about that or say, you know, like, what do you think you should do? It was just like, no, we're doing this together. I think that's so powerful and would make such a difference and really highlights that need for people to have that support network around them to really help them get through it, because it's something that would just be just so much harder on your own. But to have those people around you is so important. And it's amazing as well that they weren't runners or athletes themselves, but were keen to do that and knew that that was something that would help you. How did you then start to decide or come up with what that was actually going to look like and what the Dean's Team was actually going to start to do?
Well, we at the same time, I got my neurologist sent me to Parkinson's New South Wales, their offices over in Ryde, to get some. I made a phone call to the helpline first, and they said, come in and see us. We've got something that we need to put you through first. And so I went in and seen them. They put me through the process to apply for the NDIS, right, which would fund therapies here in New South Wales. So I went in, I started to go through that process, which was a lengthy process, let me tell you. Being a government department and stuff like that. At the time I was doing that, I had to get reports. So I had to go to these different therapists to get reports on my condition to submit to the NDIS. So I got a speech pathologist. I got a report from my neurologist. Then I had to go to this place called Advanced Rehab Center, or ARC for short. So if I say ARC, it'll be Advanced Rehab Center, in Artarmon. They are in Sydney here. And they have physios, exercise physiologists, occupational therapists, all there. And it's only for neurological disorders they do. They don't have anyone off the street type of thing going in there to work out or anything like that. They only do neurological disorders. A lot of mostly Parkinson's, but a lot of stroke victims and stuff like that, you know, that they help. So I got these reports, and that brought the exercise component into my mind there. And it takes us to like early 2020 by that stage. And I got the reports, and I got the funding eventually, 6 months later. I started off with a program called PD Warrior, which was invented by the CEO of Advanced Rehab Center. And it's a brain, sort of like a, it's exercise for the brain type of thing, but they're physical exercises, but they tend to mend the, which way did she put it? She put it like it mends the neural pathways in the brain. Helps to sort of replace the neural pathways that you're losing. And I started on that program. They had a 10-week program to start it off. And after 10 weeks, I was feeling a lot better. And some of my symptoms were starting to ease. And I was really starting to feel good. So that led me back to running. And so I'm starting to feel good. I'm exercising again. So my mind went back to running, and my mind went back to the Dean team and that idea. And my mind went back to the Von Gusto boys. I said to, I got the guys together, and I said, let's do some running. I said, I'm a bit goal orientated. I need something in the distance to aim at if I'm going to exercise, you know. I've always been like that. And I said, let's do the Sydney Marathon 2021. And sort of they looked like I felt when I was diagnosed with Parkinson's when I told them. that the look on the faces, I think that would have been the look on my face, as you can imagine. So that's how the marathon and the exercise started. And so I went back to Advanced Rehab Center and told them this. They sent an EP, an exercise physiologist, to me to talk about it, by the name of Lisa Meng. She was excited that someone with Parkinson's wants to run a marathon. She gave me a little bit of a test when I first met her. That was where it all started. And I can explain that test if you want me to.
Yeah, it's very mysterious and intriguing.
All right. It was only a running test, but you know. it's not that intriguing. But we went outside in our time, and then we went outside of the building, and she said, "All right, so," and I had my workout gear on because we're going to do some exercise anyway. She said to me, "Like, we're going to go for a run," and mind you, this is the first run I've been on in I don't know how many years.
Gosh!
Yeah, so you can imagine. Well, I thought, okay. How far are we going to go, you know? So I was a bit horrified, but she said, stay on my left shoulder, all right? I'll set the pace. Stay on my left shoulder. We're not going to go far. But we took off, and it was like about, I don't know, I didn't have my watch at the time, so I wasn't ready for it. I didn't have the
doesn't garment. Count then if it wasn't on the watch.
If it's not on Strava, it doesn't count.
Exactly.
That's exactly right, yeah. And I didn't have it at the time, the watch, because I wasn't. So we took off, and we ended up going 3 kilometers. That's all, at about like 8 minute pace. You guys are runners, so you know what that's like. You know, it's virtually a walk in the park. But at the end of 3 kilometers and 8 minute pace, I've collapsed on my hands and knees outside.
Oh, no.
I never felt anything like it. And, and she turned to me and said, well, we can work with that. 3 kilometers at 8 minute pace, and I'm going for a marathon.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. Anyway, we had about 13 months or 14 months by that stage to get to Sydney 20 or 21. She said, we can work with that, let's do it. And she was quite excited, actually, because it's the first time she'd ever, or the first time the whole center had ever had anyone to run a marathon with Parkinson's. So that's how that started.
Oh, that's so exciting. I think anyone who's had any time off running will know that that first run back is always so hard. So I'm really impressed that you managed through 3Ks. I've just had like a very, very long time off running, and me going for my 3K run this morning felt, I imagine, like just as awful as your first 3Ks would have felt. So I'm very, very impressed. What did your actual like program look like? Like, how do you go from that to a marathon? And obviously actually doing that with Parkinson's, I imagine the strategy would have been a little bit different. Like, what did it look like? What was the training?
Slow and steady, slow and steady. And we went off heart rate for about 6 months. Straight off heart rate. I got the Garmin watch happening. I hooked into Strava, so you know, she could see everything that we were doing, what I was doing,
when
we weren't together. We'd done a lot of runs together in those early days, but I was on Strava anyway. So if I'd done something, she could see it and have all the stats. I love stats. I work off stats these days. So we're strictly running for heart rate, because obviously she didn't want to put too much stress on the heart. And we're running like zone two. It was my aim. Zone two heart rate, so it's an easy run, but we just sort of increased it just little bit by little bit by little bit over the next 6 months, and very easy start. Well, it wasn't easy for me at the start, but it started to get easier, we were doing gym sessions mainly to for injury prevention in the muscles. We were doing a lot of stretching, a lot of warm-up exercises before I'd run were very important to get the muscles in tune with what was coming. See, all those things, I had to take my medication at a certain time, so I was at my best when I was going to go for a run. All those things you have to think about when you've got Parkinson's. And so that's how we started to get into it, just slow and steady, heart rate and good planning. And Lisa had laid out a program that lasted as I said, 13 or 14 months. That was a huge program. And that encompassed all my runs, all my gym work, days off, rest days were very important to her, and she's still now, I'm still with her now, and she's in her rest days. I got to take those rest days, you know. I'm wanting to get into it, you know, and you know, even in the gym, you know, she's always telling me to rest between, you know, set. more rest, you know?
You're too keen.
So that's the way we built it up.
It's incredible having Parkinson's. Like, it's a movement disorder, as you described before. It affects your muscles, yet you're training for a marathon, which a lot of people wouldn't even dream of. Like, even runners wouldn't even dream of it. Runners would, some would find it far too long, and you're taking on this huge feat. And obviously you've got this history of running, but you're so limited with how well your body can move. So it's so impressive. Do you feel like you were sort of like breaking myths that people or like proving people wrong that might have sort of said things like, oh, you know, you're never going to be running again, you're never going to do this again? Or was it more, because I mean, obviously you had this Dean's team and this community around you supporting you. Was it more kind of proving yourself wrong with what you initially might have thought when you first got that diagnosis?
100%, 100%. I needed to prove to myself that I could do it. That's where my mind was. I had to do it. And the Dean team by that stage, we had put the word out there that we were going to do this. And we also put the word out we were going to raise money for Parkinson's New South Wales while we were doing this. So it's slowly, and our social media part went out, and all our the word went out to everyone. We had maybe by this stage about 50 or 60 people that had Dean team members. It had grown, the community around me had grown, and even the EPs and the physios at ARC were joining the team, and you know, we had a whole lot of people. So I put it out there that we're going to do this for a specific reason. That was to keep me accountable so I wouldn't pull out. So I knew, they knew what I wanted, and I didn't want to pull out. So I kept telling people what we were going to do. And I kept telling people the other message, that exercise helps the symptoms of Parkinson's. And this is one of the things that was going to be a big push for our team. So in my mind, the ultimate running exercise is the marathon. That's the ultimate. I mean, you know, it's a rare breed, so to speak, that can do like a marathon, if that doesn't sound too arrogant.
It's massive.
Yeah. And so that was the biggest challenge I could think of. So that's the only way that I could think of that I could prove to people with Parkinson's, and I had to prove it. For me to say it, for me to be on this podcast today, I had to prove it could be done. So I put a lot of pressure on myself, I know. My wife was horrified when I told her what I was doing, absolutely horrified. That's what it had to be. I had to prove to myself mainly that I could do it, and then prove to those with Parkinson's that not so much a marathon, but they could do their own marathon challenge type of thing. I mean, for me, because I've been exercising all my life, it may be a little bit easier for someone that never ran before. Maybe their challenge had to be a little bit different. It could be a swimming challenge. It could be any kind of challenge. You know, but it had to be a big one for them. And so, that was my thinking behind that.
Yeah. I mean, the marathon is such a big statement. You know, you could have done a different distance and that would have been amazing in itself. But to put it out to the world that you were doing a marathon, I think a lot of people, even non-runners, can understand that that is a huge challenge without really understanding the depths of it. So to say that and put that out there to the world would have been a really bold statement. And I think, it's interesting hearing about you're telling all these people, so it makes you feel like you need to do it. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, because if you've got this kind of idea in your head, no one knows about it, if you don't do it, does it really matter? But as you tell someone, one person or 50 people, then you're really more likely to pursue it and do it. And I'd love to know how that day was for you. I don't know if you were feeling nervous, a lot of pressure, or if you're excited. How did that day
The marathon in 2021 you're talking about?
Yeah.
It was in where are you guys based?
We're Sydney now as well. Yeah.
Do you remember the marathon 2021 at all?
We weren't here at the time. No.
It was COVID year. So yes, it didn't happen, didn't it?
It didn't happen. So there's a story to that. We get at halfway through the, or a little bit towards the start of the year, I hooked up with a lady called Malva Luck. She was head of Pont 3, who were the marathon organizers, okay? And it was Blackmores back then, the Blackmore Sydney Marathon, organized by Pont 3. So I hooked up with her to ask for some special things during the marathon. I wanted some of my team members to run with me as support, because I had a lot of things to think about. I had medication that I was going to have to take during the run. I had fluids. I had to take food with medication. All these sorts of things that I needed to think about. And when you're in the throes of a marathon, maybe you're not thinking straight, you know, sometimes. So I wanted a couple of people with me, and I didn't want them to have to register and stuff like that. I also wanted a bike rider with me, which they never, you can imagine putting a bike rider on an official marathon course. Well, they were going to do it. They were going to do it. They were going to allow a bike rider to follow me around the course with my fluids on board and stuff like that. So we were doing all this organizing. The team was growing. People were coming not to do the marathon, but doing other distances as part of the running festival. And then they were going to be at the end to support me at the end, you know. And all this was getting built up and built up. And all of a sudden, about 3 weeks before the marathon on September 19th, I think it was, in 2021, about 3 weeks beforehand, she rings me up and says, "Dean," I said, "I've got some bad news. We're right in the middle of COVID." She goes, "I'm not sure whether it's going to happen." And also by this stage, we'd raised just over $20,000.
Wow.
In our fundraising for Parkinson's New South Wales as part of the marathon. So I thought, oh my God, don't tell me that. And she goes, "I'm going to ring you next week sometime." And so she made that call next week, and she said, "Dean, it's off, and it's been cancelled completely. It's not delayed; it's cancelled completely." And I was devastated. And this was 2 weeks before it was going to happen. We had everything in place. 2 weeks to go, and I called my EP, Lisa. She came over to my place. My wife was there, and I said to her, "It's off. It's over." She goes, "What are we going to do now?" And I said, "I'm not sure." I said, "Let me think about it." So I thought, and I thought for a day. One day is all it took. And I ring her up. And I said, "Lisa," she goes, "Yeah." And I said, "We're going to do the marathon." She goes, "But it's off." I said, "Yeah, I know it's off." I said, "We're going to do our own. I'm going to create my own marathon." And we had 2 weeks to do it. So the team, that's where the team come in then. I was calling in favors left, right, and center to get things organized in 2 weeks to do our own marathon in the middle of COVID. We put together, I contacted the local council, got some exemptions from things, and we got people to come down, and especially just in our COVID area, and maybe a couple of people illegally out of their COVID area probably. But on the day, it turned out that we had something like 80 to 100 people turn up in the park. We based ourselves in a park down at Leichhardt on the Bay Run. I don't know if you know the area at all, but there's a bay at Leichhardt, and the run around the bay and up this place they call the Greenway, which is just a path, a tree-lined path and stuff like that, and back to the starting point, was exactly 10 and a half kilometers. So four laps of that is your 20 your marathon, right? We ended up getting 80 between 80 and 100 people down to watch the marathon, which is incredible, you know. And the Dean team had put out the word for us. We'd done the work, so we turned up there at 5 in the morning in our park, in our starting point, and at 6 o'clock we set up a gazebo with all information, Parkinson's information that we can give out to people, because it was a Sunday afternoon, it was a Sunday morning, It was going to be a nice day, so there'd be a lot of people down on the bay and in the park. So we wanted to hand out brochures and information about Parkinson's and all that kind of stuff, and get donations in if people wanted to donate. So that was it. The marathon was back on again, 2021.
Wow, what a turnaround.
We took off at 6 o'clock in the morning on that day.
Yeah. And how was the run itself? I'd love to hear the kilometer run, by kilometer.
Yeah. The run was highs and lows. Mm-hmm. I went through that many emotions that day.
Mm.
It was just incredible. We took off early in the morning, and there was about three or four of us that were going to do the marathon. So there was one of the EPs, Ma Lu, who was going to do it as well. So he took off as well. He ended up doing it in some great time of something like 3 hours 15 or something. But he was young. And he didn't have Parkinson's. So that was enough. So Lisa spent the first half of his marathon with him, supporting him, because I knew I'd be right for a while at least. And so I'm rotating on the course. As I said, 10 kilometers a lap. My wife's in the little tent, the little gazebo that we had set up, giving out brochures and that kind of stuff. And so I get to 25 kilometers, getting towards 30 kilometers, and Lisa joins me, running beside me. And I was cruising at 25, 26, 27, 28 kilometers. I was absolutely cruising. I was virtually in autopilot. And Lisa said to me, I said, "How great are you looking?" I said, "Yeah, I feel good. I feel really good." Yeah. I had my granddaughter Sienna on a bike behind me, and she rode the whole way so far on a bike. She was 20. She was 10 at the time. So she had all my drinks and stuff on. She rode 25 kilometers already by that stage. In training, I'd only got to 30 Ks in training for the marathon. And that was our plan, to coincide the marathon with my last, a couple of weeks beforehand, I'd done my last run of 30 Ks. That was the plan, and then save my energy for the day. So I get to 30 Ks, and it was like you flip the switch on my brain, and all of a sudden my body started to hurt. I call that moment uncharted waters. I actually have a book coming out that we'll talk about later, I suppose, and I call that moment uncharted waters. It's a distance I'd never gone before, you know, and it was like flipping a switch in my brain. My body started to hurt. My feet started to get numb. I was starting to get tired. Muscles were getting sore. My right arm, which is the one that's affected with Parkinson's, started to swing less than the left arm. And you can imagine trying to run with sort of one arm not swinging like the other arm. Your momentum was thrown right off. And within about 2 kilometers, I was starting to fall apart when I passed the 30K. So I get to around the bay and up onto the bridge that goes over near Birkenhead Point Shopping Centre there. And I'm coming back onto the side of the bay that our tent was at the 30, it would have been about 36 kilometre mark by that stage. And I get this almighty cramp in my right hamstring. And it was like the hamstring was ripping off the bone. It was just horrendous. And I didn't tell anyone at the time, but my body's got this habit of when I get into severe pain, it's only happened to me twice before this time, I black out. And the two times it happened before, I had kidney stones. And if anyone knows what they're like, they're really they reckon they're really bad. It's really painful. And at this stage, at this mark of the marathon, I get this pain and I start to black out, and my vision starts to get black from the outside in, until it goes into a little, you know, it keeps getting blacker and blacker and blacker, and all of a sudden, bang, I'm gone. And I think to myself, I'm at 36 kilometers. I'm in pain. I'm starting to black out. If I black out, they're going to call the ambulance or something like that. And it's all over. And, you know, I said, this can't happen. I can't be training all this time and have the whole Dean team concept hanging on this run and get to 36 Ks out of a 42 K run. And then it all over. I was very upset at that stage. And just at that time, Lisa's grabbed my leg, physically grabbed my leg and put it up on the bridge, the wall of the bridge there. And she's stretching my hamstring out, and I was in agony. But she wasn't that gentle either with me, let me tell you. And she's stretching my hand, and all of a sudden the pain started to subside a bit. The darkness started to go away, and she said, come on, let's keep going. You know, you've got this, you know. And that was her favorite saying. It's still easy. She said, you've got this. Let's get moving. So we started moving, and it was more like a Cliff Young shuffle. Then a run, but so be it. We're going forward. So we got along this bridge. It started to come down, and what I didn't realize at the time was one of the girls that was running with me behind me was one of my daughter's girlfriends, and she had a phone with her, and she called back to our home base where there was something like 50 or 60 people just there. To my daughter, which was there, who was there as well, and the call went to my wife as well, that I'm in trouble, and I was in trouble at that stage. I was thinking, I'm not going to finish this because I was still in a lot of pain, and the call went back, and as we come down off the bridge, flattened out into the park at King George there, I was met by 20 people. Waiting for me as I come down the hill, 20 Dean team members, and one of them had this Bluetooth speaker that was blaring out my favourite tunes, like Eye of the Tiger, We Are the Champions from Queen, you know, that kind of stuff. It was really loud, and I could see them as I come down the hill, and that sort of gave me the boost that I needed to sort of, and, you know, started the shuffle. You know, began into a like a proper run, sort of, so that boosted me at that stage, and took me a little bit further in my run. Do you want to hear how it ended?
Yes. Oh, of course, we've got a cliffhanger now.
Yeah, all right. I just got to get a drink of water here.
Build the suspense.
Yeah. So I've gone past. And I'm still wobbling, you know, you start to get the death wobbles. You've seen the end of marathons, and it's the death wobbles, right? So I ended up almost in the garden bed at one stage alongside this path. And at that stage, I had my brother on one side, my brother Scott on one side, and my son Vincent on the other side. And they were physically shouldering me back into the straight line, you know, if I started to wobble out. Physically hitting me with their shoulders. it was incredible. So we get along to the tent where my wife is. All we had to do from that point, that was the finish line, but we had to go past it, up the greenway and back. That finish, that was 40 kilometres was where the tent was. So we had to go a kilometre up the greenway and a kilometre back to plus 100 metres, of course. We were going to make it the exact distance. So I'm running and shuffling and running. I was in pain. You could see I was in pain. Lisa was right behind me saying, you've got this, you've got this. I didn't want to lose it at that stage, so I couldn't look at my wife, because I knew as we passed that tent, if I looked up and I seen her and she saw the pain that I was in, I knew I'd lose it. So I tried to keep my head forward and just focus on the path ahead of me. and not look at her at all. So I'd done that, and I sort of stuck my head down to the road and just kept going. I ran past her, and to this day, I don't know what she was thinking at the time. I didn't ask her. I probably don't want to know, really, because she was worried about me just starting to run, let alone me, in that kind of pain, finishing it. So I went up the greenway. As I got into the greenway, there's all these people having picnics, because by that day stage it was 11 o'clock in the day, beautiful sunny day, a beautiful winter sunny day, about 24, 25 degrees. It was perfect. And all these people having picnics. I've got 20 people running behind me at this stage with the ghetto blaster or the Bluetooth speaker still blaring music, like inspirational music. And it was amazing. In the middle of COVID, and everyone's coming to the path and cheering me on. Half of them were friends that I knew, half of them I didn't know. And these people just all coming to the path and cheering. Some of them didn't even know what was going on at the time, but because everyone else was cheering, they were cheering. So we've got this group of 20 people on the path following me going up the green. When we turn around, people cheering on the side, and I had to come back through a clump of trees to the finish line. And we were about 50 meters from the finish line. And that's when 42.2 clicked over on my watch, just as we're about 50 meters from the finish line. And I said, oh, I've done it. So, I'll let the watch go just a bit. And something happened that I've never seen before, and I'll probably never see again. My wife ran out 50 meters, and I've never, she used to be very sporty in her younger days, but she was never a runner, and I've never seen her run really before this day. So it, I bag her about that a little bit, but so, but she met me about 50 meters out and wanted to run under the, I made this finish arch. I made it myself. I painted it. It looked ugly as anything, but it stood out anyway. So she's ran the 50 meters and Lisa was with me. It was quite appropriate that her and Lisa were running with me under that finish arch, quite appropriate. On that day, and the thing is, she ran under the finish arch first, so she beat me under. She beat me to the finish line. She just come out 100 meters to run.
She wanted the glory.
I run 42.2 and kilometers, and she beat me to the finish line. I couldn't believe it. I got over the finish line and just fell apart. I just collapsed onto the ground. I couldn't stand up. They brought a chair over. They sort of, my son and my brother picked me up physically and sat me in the chair. And it was a very emotional time. From not thinking I was going to make it at one stage to making it through that finish line, I think the body just gave way. Once I knew I was under the arch, the body just gave way, and that was it. So, and there must have been 100 people around in the park at the time, trying to stay away from each other because it was, it was 1.5 meters at time in the middle of COVID. So I thought, oh, we're going to get the police down here. And but they were all over the park. So that's how the finish. I didn't stay sitting too long, because if I stayed sitting too long after a marathon, you're going to cramp up and I wouldn't be able to get up at all. So I just stayed sitting until I got my legs back. And then I started walking around to the crowd, and they wanted to know how it went and talking to people and stuff like that. And that was it. Wow. We got there, and the Dean team could work with that.
Yeah. Wow. What a day. I mean, we've heard some pretty cool stories on this podcast, but that's got to be up there with one of the most just incredible journeys. And I think, you mentioned how emotional it was and how up and down it was, and such a roller coaster. And I think you described it so well. There are just so many parts of that that would have been such big highs and just such an incredible feeling, but also some really, really hard times. And you almost had to pull out. And It sounds like physically, emotionally, mentally, it was a lot.
And
so nice to have all of that support as well. It sounds like a really incredible time.
Well, that's what got me through, really. Yeah.
Between now and then, after that incredible day, what was kind of the next steps for you? Did you straight away think, okay, what's next? Or were you kind of enjoying that moment for a little bit longer? And I guess what's on the cards for you at the moment?
No enjoying the moment, no rest for the dream team. I had about 4 or 5 days off running,
yeah.
And we were straight back into it by the next weekend. We were straight back into it. Yeah. But the Dean Team project was really kicking off at that stage. So we were getting more exposure all the time. Our fundraising was moving along. Our exposure and our advocacy for people with Parkinson's was moving along. So we were going in the right direction. And we were helping people because we were getting the word back that things were going along quite nicely.
And Dean, we know that you're writing a book as well. So
yes,
is that around your marathon journey? Is it journey from diagnosis of Parkinson's to where you are now? Would you be able to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, the book is actually finished.
Oh, wow.
The writing, my writing is finished. It's with the editors at the moment.
Amazing.
Which means it may have 6 months worth of work left. You got to do, like, if anyone's ever written a book, I've never written a book. I failed English at school, so But this book is 19 chapters and 63,000 words.
Wow.
Yes, and I've written every word myself. The book is the whole story, right from when my early soccer days. Right through the individual sports, the running, right up to the diagnosis, the marathon of 21, the dinner, all sorts of things that I've done, and some incredible stuff's happened to us on the way through this whole project. We've been mentioned on the Parliament floor of New South Wales in a talk about our team and the work we've been doing, and things. I believe, because I'm a Christian, I believe God has been blessing us during this whole time. And just the things that have been happening are virtually miracles along the way. So I had to put it all in a book. And the book then culminates with the marathon last year of 2023, the Sydney Marathon. That's the last chapter of the book, and then I just wrap it up with a final word after that. So it's virtually the whole story.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I'm hoping for that to be ready for publishing by the end of the year, we'll see what happens. Awesome. It's sort of like a how-to book of people. I explain everything about Parkinson's and how we fight it with exercise, because the fact remains is that at the start of the training for that 21 marathon, the one we done ourselves, the start of that training a year before, I had something like 7 or 8 symptoms of Parkinson's. By the time I got to the marathon itself, I had about 2 or 3. So I reversed some of the symptoms, and some of the symptoms were abated quite a lot. I was left with virtually 2 symptoms, the tremor and fatigue.
We'd love to know, Dean, is there any way that we can best support you or the listeners if they're feeling inspired or they'd like to learn more? How can they get involved? We'll have all of your links below, but if there's anything that they can do right now to help get involved, what's that?
Yeah, look, they can just contact me or go to my website. There's lots of things that we can do. We want to spread the word of people getting to exercise quickly after their diagnosis, because the quicker you get to it, the better prognosis you have long term. I'm 12 years now into my diagnosis, and honestly, I feel fitter and healthier and stronger than I ever have in my whole life. And I want others to feel exactly the same. They can live well with Parkinson's. you know, it doesn't have to be. For me, it's been a blessing, really. And to say that of a incurable degenerative brain disorder, that's a big statement. But that's the way I feel. And that your listeners can help by just spreading the word of the Dean team. And, you know, if they want to spread the word and spread our donation page, you know, it all helps. It all helps people with Parkinson's. And we will continue this work. I'm not sure whether there'll be, there probably won't be another marathon in it for me, but there'll be a half. And some other challenges coming up, some big challenges. So, yeah, that's how people can help. Just get involved. Mm. Just get onto the webpage, get involved, and that's how we can help.
Dean, that's really powerful what you said about inspiring people to move and how you're feeling the healthiest and fittest you've ever felt and you want other people to experience that. It's really special. What about things that people could do maybe more locally, like if they have someone in their lives that's suffering some kind of degenerative condition or a brain disorder or a movement disorder, maybe someone that's close to them or a friend of a friend?
Well, they like,
What can we do to support our loved ones and our peers?
Well, support is the word. Just let them know that they've got someone to go to. If they need help with something, I know I can sort of I can ring up one of my mates and say, listen, what are you doing? And I know what they're going to say. They're going to say, I'm not doing anything. Come over if you want. What do you need? Or, you know, in that 21 marathon, I put out the call that we're going to have the marathon ourselves, and 80 to 100 people turned up. And created a fantastic day that I will never forget. You know, that kind of support is invaluable. Wouldn't it be great if we could have Dean teams, the concept of Dean teams, popping up all around Australia around people that have Parkinson's? You know, everyone around that has Parkinson's, a Dean team pops up around them. But you have to stand up and say, listen, you know, I need some help. The person themselves has to do that. There's no other way of doing it. But if you know someone with Parkinson's, just you know, a family member or a friend, just go to them and say, listen, I'm with you. Whatever you need, give me a call. And that will make all the difference. And maybe that'll be their tipping point. And you'll tip them the way that I was tipped. And for that to happen, if you can get that happening all over Australia, we can, there might not be a cure yet, but I reckon that's a permanent fix. I intend it to be. And if we can get that going all around Australia, that would be, that will be, you know, just amazing. There's nothing like a community around you to bring you through those really hard times. And you will have those hard times. I can guarantee that. I still have my times where I struggle with it from time to time, especially the fatigue factor. I know that I've got a huge amount of support. And I know Strava will tell people how I'm going to start off with. So I can't get away with anything there. But that's what I think I'd like your listeners to take away from this. Find someone, but it doesn't even have to be Parkinson's. It can be someone that, you know, with a cancer or, you know, a long-term illness or something like that. Just let them know that you're there. And help them build a team around them that can bring them through. It makes all the difference.
Such a powerful message, Dean. And I feel really inspired. And I think I could just listen to you. You're a great storyteller. I could listen to you all day. And I just think the work that you're doing is so incredible. It would just take so much courage for you to kind of put yourself out there and to make a stand and to choose the hard option, you know, like you could have kind of let it take over and sat back and watched your life go by, but you've really worked so hard to get yourself to where you are and now showing so many other people that they can do the same thing and that this is possible. And yes, you've said there's no cure, but the fact that you've been able to reverse those symptoms and you're feeling so healthy and fit now is just a testament to the hard work that you've put in. So yeah, well done. And thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, we have a saying at the Dean team. It's our sort of our motto, it is to beat relentless, you have to be relentless, and that's our motto. Parkinson's is relentless, but we're going to meet it with relentless, and we will beat it. Eventually, we will beat it. I have no doubt in my mind.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dean. We will look out for you in your purple shirt at the Hoka Half. We'll be cheering you on and can't wait to see what else you achieve in the next few years. And we will have all of your links below for the listeners to check out what you're up to and follow along.
Thank you very much. And it's been a pleasure talking to you today and your listeners.
Thank you so much, Dean. Yeah, very excited for all our listeners to get involved and to cheer you on at Hoka Half in May.
Yep, no worries. I'll be there.
All right, here we are at the end of the episode. We're going to give you a little 5 or 10 minute update on how we're doing, what's been happening. Lydia's had some more Strava activity, which is always exciting. And I've got Canberra Half Marathon this weekend. So, Lids, would you like to kick us off with your little update?
I would love to kick us off. So,
Spin that yarn.
We're gonna spin the yarn. We're gonna do some kicking, and yeah, I've had some great updates. I actually can't even remember where we're at last time, but I have had 3 weeks of consecutive running, and now this is my fourth week, which I'm not running at all because I'm having a deload week, which originally was gonna be just a down week, but I decided to have a full halt to my running because I wanted to be extra conservative. And that's mostly around my risk of bone stress injury. Basically, I've been very inactive particularly the last 4 months, but also just the last 14 months. So I'm very, very aware of the fact that my bone density is at an all-time low. And I don't mean that, like, I don't want to say that. And for people that are like, oh, I've had a little bit of time off running, I'm going to have lost some bone density, because it doesn't work like that. Running isn't really conducive to building bone density. But I'm talking about me, like, sitting on my tush for a big part of the last year and not being able to lift any heavy weights in the gym again because of my injury. So that's the main reason why I have concerns of my bone density. But despite all of that, I'm not actually thinking that I'm about to get a stress fracture, but I'm more just taking the preventative measures. So yeah, we're feeling really good. I still have a lot of pain in my leg, like doing basically everything but running, but running itself has felt really good. And I'm so, so excited to be back.
Good. Okay. I'm glad that that is what's happening. The deload week is happening, because I did wonder yesterday if I had missed some things on Strava or something had changed or what was happening, but that's good. I think that's very sensible. I think good to be conservative. I'm on board with that decision, and I'm excited to see your runs next week. And I hope that the runs continue to feel good. And I hope that the other stuff can improve in the good sensations, you know, take some of that running feeling into other aspects. Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Gosh, I really hope. I'm not feeling that hopeful, to be completely honest, but I don't even know what the word is, because like I just don't actually feel hopeful. I really don't. But I'm also just, you know, I'm putting my good energy out to the universe, and I don't know what I should do. Maybe I should buy some crystals, because I'm running out of physio interventions.
Yeah, I guess you haven't tried that yet, right? So
that's a good point. If anyone's got any crystal recommendations, hit me up. Actually, I have got a black crystal to suck away all the negative energy. So maybe I'll put that on my foot. Maybe I'll sleep with that.
Yeah, rub it around the foot. Oh, yeah, put it in a sock.
If anyone's got any recommendation for crystals that heal the body, let me know, because that is my next treatment route.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something. I'm sure it's just your aura or something like that, you know? Maybe the horoscope or the – what's the other one? Metrograde or something?
I don't know what the metrograde is, but
I've just done something which
Been to a psychic?
Oh my god, I'm going to a psychic.
Oh, you haven't been yet.
I've just booked in. It's a month away. Something I've wanted to do for years.
Oh my goodness.
And I just like, I think this is the time because I need to know what's wrong.
What if they tell you, what if it's bad news?
Well, then I'm just going to say that I don't believe in psychics. No, honestly, like,
I'm got excited. A good feeling.
Yeah, me too. I'm so excited. And like,
can we live stream the conversation?
I'm going to record. Don't you worry. I'm going to have my camera and do a little sneaky record. Yeah. Just filming my face for the reactions. So yeah, just you wait.
Goodness.
Just you
That's
wait.
Big news.
I know. I was running out of options. So I'm not kidding when I said I'm really running out of options. This is the final option.
Well, I can't wait for the next episode where we get the updates on the crystals and the psychic readings. That's right. Yeah. Build the suspense. Get the crystals
right,
happening.
Sophie Lane, how are you feeling in prep for Canberra Half Marrow on Sunday?
Yeah, well, as we are recording, it is Friday afternoon. The half marathon is on Sunday morning, and I'm feeling really good.
Okay.
I did tell you that I had a little, I said injury, but I feel like that's the incorrect term. Basically, this is going to sound so silly, but the other day, maybe Tuesday, Zach is my partner for those who don't know, were doing some like Irish dancing, I want to say. I don't know if that's what I'd call it, but some kind of fast-paced dancing when you're kicking your feet around.
Oh,
and I kicked his butt very quickly, fast, firmly, with a lot of velocity and a lot of force, and I have since got a very purple toe, but it doesn't hurt to run, so I think I'm okay. But it was a bit scary at the time. I was like, "Ooh, this kind of hurts," and then it was fine. And then the next day, it was very purple. So that's it, though. If that's all I've got, I think I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah. Well, look, it's not a running injury as such, so I guess that's a good thing, right? Like, you haven't had any training errors, so I'm proud of you for that.
Thank you.
But I do have questions around your Irish dancing.
Do you want to see it?
What is difficult? I'd love to see. I'm so glad you're branching out. I feel like you were due to take up a new hobby, so I'm very proud of you for that. But what happened to your water activities? I thought you were getting into the ocean.
Oh, I was. Did you not see my paddleboard the other day?
No, I didn't actually. Sorry about that.
Well, I went for a paddle the other day. And I got back on the unicycle. So all the hobbies are there. They're all happening. Back on the uni.
Oh, I'm
got
so happy.
A couple of revolutions going hands free. Big progress on that.
Wow.
So stay tuned. But anyway, we are a running podcast, so I will stick to running. Physically, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling fit. Body's feeling good. Got that funny little ankle situation.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, what's the goal? Pace. Like, this is a running podcast, so let's talk the details. What's the plan to start the event?
The goal is, well, my PB from Canberra Half Marathon, if anyone was listening back then in 2022, I got 1:45 and a couple seconds. So the goal is to beat that. Now, I'm just bringing up the pace calculator because what I realized was the pace for 1:45 isn't as quick as I thought it was. So I think I'm going to do better than I think I thought I was. So basically, pace for 1:44 is 4:56, which is not as quick as I thought. So now I'm thinking I need to aim a bit higher. So now if we go 1:40, I think that will be probably a little bit quick, but somewhere in between. So basically what I'm saying is my A goal, I'm going with 1:42.
Okay. I like it. And what pace is that?
Well, I'm trying to calculate, but I'm...
Hey, come on, get your maths happening.
There's a lot of little things for that. And then my, like, B goal is a PB. You know what I'm saying? So anything under 1:45.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. It's good to have a range.
Oh, I got the pace.
Pace?
4:44 for 1:40.
Beautiful. I reckon that's realistic. I feel like you've been running pretty well.
Thanks. It's hard to know. I like at the Delta sessions for some of the tempo stuff, I've been going at sort of 4:40 and that's felt pretty good, but it obviously hasn't been for that long, that duration, but also I haven't been tapered and fresh and had the atmosphere and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I reckon around that 1:42 mark seems realistic. So that is the aim.
It's so crazy, isn't it? Because for some reason in my head, 440 sounds so slow, like slow in quotation marks, and then 439 sounds so fast.
Yeah,
but they're so similar. Do you know what I mean?
Like, so they couldn't really be much
in the 40s. I'm like,
you're good.
So fine. Like, you'll do that easy. But as soon as it's like, do you know what I mean? Like, just the lower you get, the harder it gets.
Yeah, it's crazy. How it goes. Isn't it? The 1 second makes a big difference. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it just, for some reason, like, obviously a big part of running and pacing is psychological, but we also know it's more than that. Like, it's not just like think it and you'll achieve it, but you can really like stress yourself out in a race where you like thinking, how am I feeling? Am I feeling good? Am I on track? And then you get a couple seconds ahead and then you're worried you're going to burn out. And then you get a couple seconds behind. You're like, oh gosh, like there's so many mental games. So it is really hard. And you haven't really done a race for a while where you've actually been like on the clock, looking at your time. Like, when was the last one you did that?
Yeah. I was trying to think. Maybe, I don't know. No, like a half marathon. Like I think the last half I did was Melbourne.
Yeah,
and that was meant to be a training run. I can't remember what I was training for.
That was like a year and a half ago. Yeah, long time. Wow.
So the sky's the limit. So I'm excited, keen. It'll be, just nice to test the body. Like I say I'm excited, but also like if I'm running as hard as I can for an hour and 45, like or an hour and 42, sorry, that's still going to be like not that fun. But I'm excited for the before and after, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's very exciting. It's just going to be a good event. So many people from Sydney are going to be there, so many friends, and it's just going to be a good vibe.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully I'll get to FaceTime you when I'm halfway through. I'll give you a phone call.
No, I do not want you to FaceTime me. I want you to focus on your event, please.
It's way more fun, though.
No.
I need to decide. Will I have music? Will I not? It's just a lot to figure out.
Mate, I don't know why you haven't decided this already, and I don't know why you haven't got the pace calculator out already.
I'm busy.
Yeah, but it's race week. Race is in 2 days.
No, it's not that serious, you know. You got to know that about me. Someone messaged me today saying they were like, not sure when they were going to do their long run this weekend because all the rain and stuff. And they said, what's the weather going to be like for Canberra? And I just replied saying, I don't know. I haven't looked. Like as if I've checked already. It's Friday. I've got 2 days to figure that out.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I care, but I also, whatever, to don't run, care. You know?
Yeah. So this is the thing, like,
I know.
I just don't care that much about doing events. I just enjoy the process of training. But if I'm going to do an event, then I'll do all the things, like all the things, check the weather, check the pace calculator, but like months before.
Yeah.
I'm going to be getting the long-term forecast from the bomb. I'm going to be paying for some extra.
But also to me,
forecast.
Like the weather, what's the difference, you know? No, hang on. What's that shocked face for?
I don't even have any words. What's the difference of the weather? Yeah. Mate. How did today's weather affect your run compared to running in 40 degree heat in summer?
Well, okay. We know it's not 40 degrees.
Difference?
So it's, yeah, I would not like it to be hot. But I know it's not going to be hot. You know what I'm saying? It's not summer and it's Canberra. So it's either going to be rainy or potentially it could be windy or it could be slightly warmer or slightly cooler. There's not a lot of variables. I'm just looking now, 22 degrees. And at 7 a.m., it is 20% chance of rain, which is tapering off to a 10% chance.
Yes.
Which
well,
sounds
I know,
in my head.
I checked
I
the
do.
Weather.
Oh, sorry. Of course. I'm just letting the listeners know. Actually, they'll know because it'll be happening right now as we speak. The weather will be happening. But 20 degrees, perfect.
Yeah, it's quite good race conditions. So
good.
I'm expecting a 139.
Okay, I'll do my best. All right. Okay. Thank you so much, team. Enjoy. Hope you enjoyed the episode. We will speak to you next week with another episode every Sunday. Check out our links below for some Tailwind and some Vivos and some Scorcher sunscreen. And send us a screenshot on Instagram as to where you're listening to this episode and what you're up to. And chat to you soon.